Chapter 18. Aboard the steamer Fever Dream, Mississippi River, August 1857. When the sun rose over New Orleans the next morning, a swollen yellow eye that turned the river mists to crimson and promised a scorching day, Abner Marsh was waiting on the levee. He had run a long way the night before, plunging through the gaslit streets of the Vieux Carré like a madman, smashing into strollers, stumbling and panting, running as he had never run in all his years, until finally he realized, belatedly, that no one was pursuing him. Then Marsh had found a dim, smoky grog shop and put down three quick whiskies to stop his shaking hands. And finally, close to dawn, he had started back toward the Fever Dream. Never in his life had Abner Marsh been angrier or more ashamed. They had run him off his own damn steamboat, stuck a knife to his neck, slaughtered a goddamn baby right in front of him, on his own table. No one got away with treating Abner Marsh like that, he thought. Not white men, nor coloreds, nor red Indians, nor any goddamn vampires. Damon Julian was going to be mighty regretful, he swore to himself. Day had come now, and the hunters would become the prey. The landing was already humming with activity when Marsh approached. Another big side wheel that had put in beside the Fever Dream and was unloading. Peddlers were selling fruits and frozen creams from wheeled carts. One or two hotel omnibuses had put in an appearance. And the Fever Dream had her steam up, Marsh saw with surprise and alarm. Dark smoke was curling upward from her chimneys, and down below a ragtag group of roustabouts was loading up the last of the freight. He quickened his pace and accosted one of them. He shouted, "You there! Hold on!" The rouster was a huge, thickly built black man with a shiny bald head and one missing ear. He turned at Marsh's shout, a barrel on his right shoulder.
"Yes, sir, Captain."
"What's going on here?" Marsh demanded.
"Why's the steam up? I didn't give no orders."
The rouster frowned.
"I just loads him up, Captain. Don't know nothing, sir."
Marsh swore and moved past him. Harry Mike Dunn came swaggering across the stage, his iron billet in his hand.
"Mike,"
called Marsh. Harry Mike frowned, a fierce look of concentration on his dark face.
"Morning, Cap'n. You really sell this here boat?"
"What?"
"Cap'n York. He says you sold your half to him. Says you ain't a-comin' with us. I got back a couple hours past midnight, me and some of them boys, and York, he says you and him figured two cap'ns were one too many, and he bought you out. And he told Whitey to get the steam up, he did, and here we is. That the truth of it, Cap'n?"
Marsh scowled. The roustabouts were gathering round curiously, so he grabbed Harry Mike by the arm and drew him across the stage onto the main deck.
"I ain't got no time for no long stories,"
he said when the two of them were reasonably apart from everybody else.
"So don't pester me with no questions, you hear. Just do like I tell you."
Harry Mike nodded.
"Trouble, Cap'n,"
he said, whacking his iron club into a big, meaty palm.
"How many is back?"
Marsh asked. "Most all the crew, some passengers. Ain't but a few."
"We ain't gonna wait for no others," Marsh said. "The fewer folks on board, the better. You go hunt up Fram or Albright, I don't care which one, and get them up to the pilot house and take us out right now. You hear? I'm gonna find Mr. Jeffers. After you get a pilot up there, you meet me in the clerk's office. Don't tell anybody what's going on."
Between his thick black whiskers, a small grin could be seen.
"What we gonna do? Buy the steamboat back cheap, maybe?"
"No," said Abner Marsh.
"No, we're going to kill a man, and not Joshua neither. Now get on, meet me in the clerk's office."
Jonathan Jeffers wasn't in his office, however, so Marsh had to go round to the head clerk's cabin and pound until the sleepy-looking Jeffers opened the door, still in his nightshirt.
"Cap'n Marsh," he said, stifling a yawn.
"Cap'n York said you'd sold out. I didn't think it made much sense, but you weren't around, so I didn't know what to think. Come in."
"Tell me what happened last night," Marsh said when he was safely inside the clerk's cabin.
Jeffers yawned again.
"Pardon, Captain," he said. "I haven't had much sleep."
He went to the basin perched atop his chest of drawers and splashed some water on his face, fumbled for his spectacles, and came back over to Marsh, looking more like himself.
"Well, let me think a minute. We were at the St. Charles where I said we'd be. We figured to stay there all night, so Captain York and you could have your private dinner."
His eyebrow arched sardonically.
"Jack Eli was with me, and Carl Fram, and Whitey, and a few of his strikers, and, well, there was a whole bunch of us. Mr. Fram's cub had come along, too.
Mr. Albright dined with us, but went up to bed after dinner, while the rest of us stayed up drinking and talking. We had rooms and everything, but no sooner had we gone to bed, must have been 2 or 3 in the morning, when Raymond Ortega and Simon and that sour Billy Tipton character came to bring us back to the steamer. They said York wanted us straight away. Jeffers shrugged. So we came, and Cap'n York met everyone in the Grand Saloon and said he'd bought you out and we were leaving sometime in the morning. Some of us were sent out to find those still in New Orleans and notify the passengers. Most of the crew is here now, I believe. I got the freight all signed in and decided to get some sleep. Now, what's really happening? Marsh snorted. I ain't got time. You wouldn't believe it anyhow. You see anything strange in that saloon last night? No, Jeffers said. One eyebrow went up. Should I have? Maybe, said Marsh. Everything was all cleared away from dinner, Jeffers said. That was odd, come to think on it, with the waiters all gone ashore. Sarah Billy cleaned it up, I reckon, Marsh said. But it don't matter. Was Julian there? Yes, him and a few others I'd never met before. Cap'n York had me assign them cabins. That Damon Julian is a strange one. He stayed real close to Cap'n York. Polite enough, though, and nice-looking, except for that scar. You gave him cabins, you say? Yes, said Jeffers. Cap'n York said Julian was to have your cabin, but I wouldn't go along with that, not with all your property in there. I insisted he take one of the passenger staterooms along the saloon until I'd had a chance to talk to you. Julian said that would be fine, so there wasn't really any trouble. Abner Marsh grinned. Good, he said. And Sarah Billy, where is he? He got the cabin right next to Julian, said Jeffers. But I doubt that he's in it. Last I saw, he was wandering around the main cabin, acting like he owned the boat and playing with that little knife of his. We had a bit of a run-in. You wouldn't believe what he was doing. He was chucking his knife into one of your fancy colonnades as if it were an old dead tree. I told him to stop or I'd have Harry Mike chuck him over the side, and he did, but he stared at me belligerently. He's trouble, that one. He's still in the main cabin, you think? Well, I've been asleep, but he was there the last I saw, sort of dozing in a chair. Get dressed, Abner Marsh told him. Quick-like. Meet me down by your office. Certainly, Captain, Jeffers said, puzzled. And bring your sword cane, Marsh told him as he went out the door. Less than 10 minutes later, he and Jeffers and Harry Mike Dunn were together in the clerk's office. Sit down and keep quiet and listen, Marsh said. This is going to sound crazy, but you two have known me for years, and you damn well know I ain't no half-wit, and I don't go around telling stories like Mr. Fram. This is the goddamn truth, I swear it. May the goddamn boiler blow up underneath me if I'm lying. Abner Marsh took a deep breath and plunged into the story. He told them everything in one long rush of a speech, stopping only once when the wild scream of the steamer's whistle interrupted him and the deck began to vibrate. Put it out, said Harry Mike. Going upstream, like you asked. Good, said Marsh. And he went on with the story while the Fever Dream backed clear of the New Orleans levee, reversed her great paddles, and started back up the Mississippi beneath a hot, clean sun. When Marsh was finished, Jonathan Jeffers looked thoughtful. Well, he said. Fascinating. Perhaps we should have called in the police. Harry Mike Dunn snorted. You know better. On the river. You handle your own trouble. He hefted his billet. Abner Marsh agreed with him. This here is my steamboat, and I ain't calling in no outsiders, Mr. Jeffers. That was the way of the river. It was less bother to club a troublemaker and toss him over the side, or leave the paddles to chew him up. The old devil river kept its secrets. Especially ain't calling in no New Orleans police. They ain't gonna care about no colored slave baby. We ain't even got a body. They're a bunch of scoundrels anyway, and they wouldn't believe us. And if they did, then what? They'd come in with pistols and clubs worse than useless against Julian and his bunch. So we're to handle it ourselves, Jeffers said. How? I round up the boys and we kills them all, said Harry Mike amiably. No, said Abner Marsh. Joshua can control the others, I figure. He done it before. He tried to do right, to stop what went on last night, only Julian was too much for him. We just gotta get rid of Julian before dark. Ain't gonna be hard, offered Harry Mike. Abner Marsh scowled. I ain't so sure of that, he said. This ain't like the stories. They ain't helpless by day. They're only sleeping. And if you wake 'em up, they're awful strong and awful fast, and they ain't never easy to hurt. This has to be done right. I reckon the three of us can handle it. No sense getting others involved. If anything goes wrong, we'll get everybody off this steamer well before dark and put in someplace upriver where nobody can interfere, where none of the night folks can get away if it comes to having to kill more than just Julian. Don't think it will, though.
Marsh looked at Jeffers.
You got the duplicate key to that cabin you put Julian in?
In my safe, the clerk said, pointing towards the black iron strongbox with his sword cane.
Good, said Marsh. Mike, how hard can you hit with that thing of yours?
Hairy Mike smiled and thwacked the iron billet into his palm. It made a satisfactorily loud sound. How hard do you want me to hit, Cap'n?
I want you to crush his goddamn head in, Marsh said. And you got to do it right off, with one swing. Ain't gonna be time for no second try. You just break his nose for him, and a second later he's gonna be up tearing out your throat.
One hit, said Hairy Mike. Just one. Abner Marsh nodded, confident that the huge mate was true to his word.
Only one more problem, then. Sorry, Billy. He's Julian's little watchdog. Maybe he's dozing in some chair, but I wager he'll wake up quick enough if he sees us going for Julian's door. So he ain't gonna see us. Those boiler deck cabins got two doors. If Billy is in the saloon, we go in from the promenade. If he's outside, we go in from the saloon. Before we do anything, we make sure we know where Billy is. That's your job, Mr. Jeffers. You're going to find Mr. Sour Billy Tipton for us and tell us where he is, and then you're going to make sure he don't go wandering. If he hears a ruckus or heads for Julian's cabin, I want you to take that sword cane of yours and stick it clean through his sour little belly, you hear?
Understood, the clerk said grimly. He adjusted his spectacles. Abner Marsh paused a moment and looked hard at his two allies. The slim dandy of a clerk in his gold specs and button gaiters, his mouth tight, his hair as neatly slicked back as ever, and beside him the huge mate with his rough clothing and his rough face and his rough ways, his green eyes hard and spoiling for a fight. They were a strange pair, but a most formidable one, Abner Marsh thought. He snorted, satisfied.
"Well, what are we waiting for?" he asked. "Mr. Jeffers, you go find where Sir Billy is at."
The clerk rose and brushed himself off.
Certainly, he said.
He was back in under 5 minutes.
He's in the main cabin, sitting to breakfast. The whistle must have wakened him. He's eating eggs and boiled beefcakes and drinking plenty of coffee, and he's sitting where he can see the door to Julian's cabin. Good, Marsh said. Mr. Jeffers, why don't you go breakfast yourself?
Jeffers smiled.
I do believe I have a sudden appetite. The keys first, though.
Jeffers nodded and bent to his safe. Keys in hand, Marsh gave the clerk a good 10 minutes to find his way back to the Grand Saloon before he stood and took a deep breath. His heart was thumping.
Come on, he said to Hairy Mike Dunn, opening the door to the world outside.
The day was bright and hot, which Marsh took for a good omen. The fever dream was surging up the river, easy as you please, her wake a churning double line of white-flecked foam. She must be doing 18 miles an hour, Marsh thought, riding smooth as a Creole's manners. He found himself wondering what her time to Natchez would be, and all of a sudden he wanted to be up in her pilot house more than anything, looking out on the river he loved so well. Abner Marsh swallowed and blinked back tears, feeling sick and unmanly.
Cap'n,
Hairy Mike said uncertainly. Abner Marsh cussed.
It's nothing, he said. It's just... God... Damn it all! Come on!
He stomped off, the key to Damon Julian's cabin clenched tightly in a huge red hand. His knuckles were turning white. Outside the cabin, Marsh paused to look around. The promenade was mostly empty. A lady was standing by the railing a good ways aft of them, and about a dozen doors forward there was a fellow in a white shirt and a slouchy hat sitting with his chair tilted back against the stateroom door, but neither of them seemed much interested in Marsh and Hairy Mike. Marsh slid the key carefully into the hole.
"You remember what I told you," he whispered to the mate. "Quick and quiet. One hit."
Hairy Mike nodded, and Marsh turned the key. The door clicked open, and Marsh pushed. It was close and dark inside, everything curtained and shuttered the way the night folks liked their rooms. But they saw a pale form sprawled beneath the sheet by the light that spilled in from the door. They slid through, moving as quietly as two big noisy men could move, and then Marsh was closing the door behind them, and Hairy Mike Dunn was moving forward, raising his 3-foot-long black iron billet high over his head, and dimly Marsh saw the thing in the bed stir, rolling over toward the noise, toward the light. And Hairy Mike was there in 2 long, quick strides, all so fast, and the iron fell in a terrible arc at the end of his huge arm, fell and fell toward that dim, pale head, and it seemed to take forever. Then the cabin door shut completely. The last thread of light snapped, and in the blind pitch darkness, Abner Marsh heard a sound like a piece of meat being slapped down on a butcher's counter, and under that was another sound, like an eggshell breaking. And Marsh held his breath. The cabin was very still, and Marsh could not see a thing. From the darkness came a low, throaty chuckle. A cold sweat covered Marsh's body.
"Mike," he whispered.
He fumbled for a match.
"Yes, sir, Cap'n," came the mate's voice. "One hit, that's all."
He chuckled again. Abner Marsh scratched the match on the wall and blinked. Hairy Mike was standing over the bed, his iron in hand. The business end was smeared and wet. The thing beneath the sheet had a staved-in red ruin for a face. Half the top of its skull had been taken away, and a slow trickle of blood was soaking into the sheet. Bits of hair and other dark stuff were spattered on the pillow and the wall and Hairy Mike's clothes.
"Is he dead?" Marsh asked,
suddenly and wildly suspicious that the smashed-in head would begin to knit itself together, and the pale corpse would rise and smile at them.
"I ain't never seen nothing deader," said Hairy Mike. "Make sure," Abner Marsh ordered. "Make damn sure."
Hairy Mike Dunn shrugged a big, slow shrug, and raised his bloody iron and brought it down again onto skull and pillow. A second time, a third, a fourth. When it was over, the thing hardly could be said to have a head at all. Hairy Mike Dunn was an awful strong man. The match burned Marsh's fingers. He blew it out.
"Let's go," he said harshly.
"What'll we do with him?"
Hairy Mike asked. Marsh pulled open the cabin door. The sun and the river were before him, a blessed relief.
"Leave him there," he said, "in the dark. Come nightfall, we'll chuck him in the river."
The mate followed Marsh outside, and he locked the door behind him. He felt sick. He leaned his ample bulk up against the boiler deck railing and struggled to keep from heaving over the side. Bloodsucker or not, what they'd gone and done to Damon Julian was terrible to behold.
"Need help, Cap'n?"
"No," said Marsh.
He straightened himself with an effort. The morning was already hot, the yellow sun above beating down on the river with an almighty vengeance. Marsh was drenched with sweat.
"I ain't had much sleep," he said. He forced a laugh. "I ain't had none, in fact. Takes a bit out of a man, too, what we just done."
Hairy Mike shrugged. It hadn't taken much out of him, it seemed.
"Go sleep," he said. "No," said Marsh. "Can't. Gotta see Joshua, tell him what we done. He's gotta know so he'll be ready to deal with them others."
All of a sudden, Abner Marsh found himself wondering just how Joshua York would react to the brutal murder of one of his people. After last night, he couldn't think Joshua would be too bothered, but he wasn't sure. He didn't really know the night folks and how they thought, and if Julian had been a baby killer and a bloodsucker, well, the rest of them had done things near as bad, even Joshua. And Damon Julian had been Joshua's bloodmaster too, the king of the vampires. If you kill a man's king, even a king he hates, ain't he obliged to do something about it? Abner Marsh remembered the cold force of Joshua's anger, and with that memory found himself none too eager to go rushing on up to the captain's cabin on the Texas, especially now when Joshua would be at his worst once roused.
"Maybe I can wait," Marsh found himself saying. "Sleep a little."
Hairy Mike nodded.
"I gotta get to Joshua first, though," Marsh said.
He really was feeling sick, he thought. Nauseated, feverish, weary.
He had to go lie down for a couple hours.
"Can't let him get up."
He licked his lips, which were dry as sandpaper.
"You go talk to Jeffers. Tell him how it come out, and one of you come and fetch me before sunset. Well before, you hear? Give me at least an hour to go on up and speak to Joshua. I'll wake him up and tell him, and then when it gets dark, he'll know how to handle the other night folks. And you have one of your boys keep a sharp eye on Sour Billy. We're going to have to deal with him, too."
Lady Mike smiled. Let the river deal with him. Maybe we will, said Marsh. Maybe. I'm going to go rest now, but make sure I'm up before dark. Don't you go let it get dark on me, you understand?
Yep. So Abner Marsh climbed wearily up to the Texas, feeling sicker and more tired with every step. Standing at the door of his own cabin, he felt a sudden stab of fear. What if one of them should be inside after all, despite what Mr. Jeffers had said? But when he threw the door open and let the light come pouring into the room, it was empty. Marsh staggered in, drew the curtains back, and opened the window to let in as much light and air as possible, locked the door, and sat heavily on the bed to remove his sweat-soaked clothing. He didn't even bother with a nightshirt. The cabin was stifling, but Marsh was too exhausted to notice. Sleep took him almost at once.